Good day. Welcome to Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. Produced by Sharka Creative, I'm John Marino, and this is the Cup of Joe Political Show, made possible by Robeson Oil, the house that service built, by Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard, by White Plains Hospital, and also by Michael Labriolo, Landscape Design and Construction of Armonk. We are joined by the county executive here in Westchester, George Latimer. And County Executive Latimer, thank you. Great to have you back again here in Westchester Talk Radio. Here we are in the middle of 2023. When it comes to the goals you set for this year, how far into those goals have you gotten so far? How successful have you been in your own mind?
Well, I think we've made good progress. It's a race that's never won. So there's always something each day to be done to try to advance an idea and go forward. This is really the first full year that we're operating outside of the COVID umbrella. And that's significant because COVID was the organizing factor of our world in 2020, for much of 2021, and then into the beginning of 2022. This is really now the post-COVID world where we're trying to deal with a host of different issues. And then as this goes along, I'm sure we'll be talking about the asylum seekers. That issue has referenced and become sort of a dominant issue that was not on our radar screen. And John, every day another issue pops up. One morning a week ago, I woke up and the sky was brown and the smell of smoke in the air from the Quebec wildfires. And now there's another issue that comes on your desk. It doesn't come on my desk with the same equivalency of other ones. But so whatever we've laid out, the things that we've said we're trying to do, we've cut property taxes 4 years in a row. We've seen a reduction in crime over 5 years. We've made major infrastructure improvements. We passed some progressive legislation over the course of the year. All of those are the things that we laid out and said, here's what we'd like to accomplish over the course of a year. But the other issues come in and they complicate matters. And so it is always a work in progress.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that, the budget in Albany, of course, things go back and forth until everybody up in Albany decides on the final numbers, the final package. There's always the trickle-down effect that we have to deal with. What happened in Albany this year? So many key issues. One of them was the housing issue, and it looked like we would have a housing plan pushed by especially Westchester and Hudson Valley representatives, some people on Long Island too, to help alleviate the housing crisis. It didn't really turn out that way, it seems, the way we thought it would on day one.
Well, first of all, we in Westchester County, this administration now, the 5.5 years that I've been in, We have taken on the responsibility of seeing that there is a county role in helping to assist the development of affordable housing. Now, the housing compact dealt with housing units in general, meaning market rate as well as affordability. I'll address that in a second. But in some ways, we're very different from the other suburban counties around us in philosophy. Nassau County, Suffolk County, Rockland, Orange, Dutchess, Putnam have defined the county role differently. And certainly where we all agreed in the housing compact is that mandating certain things, requiring there to be a state override or allowing for there to be a state override of local zoning laws is not palatable. And by the way, it's also nothing the city wants. The city does not want the state to come in and dictate where they put a certain kind of facility in the Upper East Side, Upper West Side, in Chelsea, in the Morrisania section of the Bronx. So this is really the same concept of home rule that goes on everywhere in the state, not just in the suburbs. The portion of the housing compact that put a circle around a train station and said, you must allow dense population no matter what, that also didn't go over well because every 2 mile radius around a train station looks very different. If you go to downtown New Rochelle, they've embraced transit oriented development. White Plains train station embraced that type of development. Ditto the Yonkers riverfront train station area. But if you go to a place like Scarsdale, we have steep slopes to the west, you can't do the same thing. So you really have to be specific by area. Those were the disagreements with the housing compact. The areas of agreement are, number one, we have a housing crisis in New York State. We need to develop more housing, and we would argue more affordable housing. And the second thing that we agreed upon is that there should be target goals that we each have to try to strive for. 3% is as good a goal as any other. I would argue that the goal should have been regionalized so that it's a 3% aggregate in Westchester County. Not every single municipality can contribute at the same level, given the topography and given other circumstances. But so to the extent that the Housing Compact had certain principles in it that we agreed to in Westchester County, we did not agree with some of the provisions of it that were mandates. And if you recall, the way we handled in Westchester County the COVID crisis, we are considered to have handled it as effectively as anybody did. We addressed it head on. We had public education, and we made vaccination very easy. But we never mandated things. We didn't go out there and mandate our workforce, as New York City did, and said everybody who works for the county must be vaccinated. We took a different approach in taking into account the individual's right to make a decision. And in doing that, we wound up with a higher percentage of vaccination of our workforce than the places that mandated it did, because it reflects human nature. You must remember, I started out as a sales and marketing executive, and you understand that people have to agree to sign the contract in order for you to have a sale. It's right. A different mindset than if you come out of a different background. And so I think the same is true now in terms of where we are with housing and some of the other major issues. We're trying to find a way to show flexibility to resolve the problem without having to make it a mandated requirement, because mandates tend to get a reaction. People react negatively to being told what to do. We did as little kids. We do as adults. You know, we don't like to be told what to do. But if you can see your own personal interest in a particular path, then you embrace that path, and then thereby you accomplish the mission. So I do think there's work to do in housing. I think we can continue to make it. We've accomplished some level of it here in Westchester County. We have a long way to go. But I think our strategy is the right strategy.
Criminal justice, bail reform, of course, so many different sides to this issue. Are we doing enough, whether it's one way or another?
Well, look, I served 13 years in the state legislature, as you know, both houses, Assembly and Senate. Most of the issues that you've referenced are issues before the state legislature. And I make it a point not to get involved in the work that somebody else is now tasked with doing. When I was a state legislator, I didn't get involved in these county issues, even though I had been a county legislator and a former chairman of the Board of Legislators. It belongs to the people that you elect in that position. So on most of these statewide issues, I've let the state legislators comment, and of course the governor and their strategy. So bail reform and other similar things, good cause eviction, these are state issues, let them resolve it. Where we were affected by the state budget, we made some very simple asks. The authority to do certain types of things, set permit fees for gun registrations, re-registrations, establish a program. I know it's going to seem obscure when I call it the Guardian Ad Litem program, but it's a program that involves the court assigning guardians to help people who need that assistance in order to implement things that come out of the court. And so we got the local bills that we asked for done. In the macro level, the state budget hurt us financially. It withheld money that we were scheduled to receive reimbursements from the federal government on the Medicaid assistance program, Medicaid program. We wound up taking on additional costs to fund lawyers who defend the indigent in criminal matters. There were some other cost factors in the budget. We're big boys. You know, we see it happen. We lobbied. It worked out the way it did. Okay, now we have an additional X million dollars of impact on our budget. We'll deal with it. It could have been worse, so we go forward. But what we didn't do is just, you know, cry and yell. And, you know, I don't think that's a practical way to function. We have to administer our government. But the state budget was a bit of a mixed bag. And I think, you know, we'll see where it leads us to when we get to the next legislative session next January and what tack the governor takes on these things. I think there are ways to work cooperatively. And I think the key is what we've tried to do needs to be done at every level of government. You need to consult with your partners in government before you propose things. You need to dialogue with people. I need to pick up the phone and talk to a village mayor before I do something. I need to talk to the county legislators before I do something. Think it through and come up with a strategy that we could all agree with.
Mm-hmm. Marijuana reform, I guess, kind of goes in the same boat. And this has affected different communities around the state locally. Not everyone has to do it. So you've gotten different results, say, in New York City, in the Hudson Valley, out on Long Island. Is there a way to make everybody happy from a local standpoint with this?
No, it's been structured in a way that each place will do something a bit different based on their own circumstances. when the state crafted the legalization of marijuana, they chose to make it a local option at the municipal level. There was some talk about making it a county option, but then they pushed it down to the villages, the cities, and the towns. And so the local governments can't make it illegal, but they can determine if they're going to have a dispensary in their community and whether they're going to allow the growing of it in their community. Now, in Westchester, the more densely populated communities, the Mount Vernons of the world, the Larchmont villages of the world, you know, don't have open land with which to grow, you know, industrial quantities, commercial quantities of marijuana. So that's not on the table. But deciding whether or not you're going to have a dispensary, a store that sells these products, is up to the local government. So right off the bat, you have an uneven situation. Some communities reject it. Some communities embraced it. It's across the board. In terms of the impact in the society, the state, in making it legal now, doesn't allow the local governments to decide whether it's legal to consume. It is now legal to consume. The decisions we make at the county level in managing this would look like this. We make a decision, no smoking in any county parks. Why would we do that? There are people who smoke. It's an outdoor tobacco. It's ventilated. The biggest concern about smoking in public is what its impacts are for secondhand smoke to people that don't smoke. However, where you have legal smoking, you now can have legal smoking of tobacco, and you can have legal smoking of marijuana. And the odors that relate to marijuana are much more profound and long-lasting than the odors that attach to tobacco. So to try to avoid having marijuana smoking in a park, which could be anywhere. It could be, you know, where kids are playing in a kiddie ground or in a basketball court. You know, we've made it illegal to smoke in a county park. So this is how we've had to, you know, compensate for that. You can still buy the product, consume the product, consume it in your own private residence. You can, you know, you can smoke it, you know, in areas that you personally control, but in areas of public responsibility, you have to be mindful of other people. And since not everybody is doing what you're doing, they have to have their interests protected.
County Executive George Latimer here, Cup of Joe Political Show, Westchester Talk Radio, westchesterTalkRadio.com. I'm John Marino. George Latimer, gambling. So many different sides to this issue. The state is going to give out a couple of gambling licenses to be awarded in the lower portion of the state. A lot of interests are involved there, and interest over in Yonkers involved there too. If a gaming license came to Westchester, would that be a good thing?
Well, we support the application at the MGM Grand, which is at the Yonkers Raceway site. It's been a racino there, meaning electronic games of chance attached to a harness racing track. It's been there for a number of years. We support MGM Grand being given one of the three downstate licenses to operate. There is definitely an economic benefit to the city of Yonkers, to the school district of Yonkers, to the county of Westchester at differing levels of benefit. The jobs that would be created there would help employ people in Mount Vernon, the Bronx, Yonkers, right in that area that can use those jobs. And in some cases, they're good high paying jobs. So the economic benefit of a full casino in at MGM Grand is such that we support that. Now, we're in the same area that we just talked about with marijuana. You could talk about it with alcohol and tobacco, and now in the case of gambling. These are sin taxes. They're behaviors that are legal in the society. They have a societal downside. People who have a gambling problem are as addicted to gambling as somebody who's addicted to alcohol or drugs, and that's problematic for those families. The expectation and the hope is that what the state will do, having, you know, legalized gambling on a larger level, will also put in place some of the programs to help people who have gambling problems deal with it. But there's a whole different mindset. If you want to buy cigarettes and you pay a lot of tax on the cigarette product, that's your decision to consume the product. It's a legal product. The same is true of gambling. It is legally permissible to play the lottery, to play quick draw, to go to a certified gambling site and gamble on the slots or at blackjack and other types of table games. So if it is legal, if people are going to do it, they, you know, some folks would rather go to the gaming facility and risk money and lose money. They might lose more money than they would lose by paying taxes, but it doesn't matter. For them, it's an entertainment. Just like me going to a ball game and spending $8 for a hot dog and $15 right. for a beer. It's an entertainment. And I enjoy it, therefore, and if I have it, I'm willing to pay that much money to go out to the stadium. So we accept that as a reality, as long as societally we deal with the effects of what addiction to these syntaxes will be, and we're not blind to it, because some lives will be affected negatively by the advancing of gambling, as it is with alcohol and other, you know, things.
What does the state seem to be looking for before they decide to give a venture one of these gaming licenses? Can you tell? Is that hard to figure out, discern,
or is that kind of a
gray area?
I can generalize by saying there are three downstate licenses that are permissible to be awarded. There were seven altogether that was passed when we did the constitutional amendment maybe a decade ago. And the way the former governor laid it out was four of them would go upstate, and three of them would go downstate. Now, we don't use the term upstate, downstate. It's always a big discussion. Where is upstate? If you're talking to somebody in Brooklyn, they think you're upstate, sitting in Pelham or Larchmont or
I'm out in the Hamptons. They think Tuckahoe is upstate.
So, right. Yeah. Exactly. So with that thought in mind, three casinos downstate, four casinos upstate. They awarded the four casinos upstate. And the thinking was that they would have some time before anything came in downstate so they could build a base of people who want to come there. Monticello, Schenectady, Waterloo, and Waverly are the four that were issued licenses. Now, keep in mind, there are other existing casinos upstate. There are Indian casinos in Verona, Salamanca, Niagara Falls, Buffalo. There's a big debate now about putting one in Rochester. But of the three downstate ones, there are two racinos, ours in Yonkers and the Aqueduct facility out in Queens, that both of which are logical to give the licenses to. But there's a third site available, which they haven't authorized a license to, and that is the political football. And the I guess the thinking of the state decision makers are, we really need to decide where the third one or the seventh one goes before we award the other two. Even we assume we're going to award to Yonkers and Aqueduct, but not yet until we get that last site. Nassau County wants it to go at the site of the old Nassau Coliseum. There's a discussion. I think the owner of the Mets would like to see it go to Willits Point, that area around the Citi Field ballpark. Some people think it should be in Manhattan, and that would be the world-class casino, and some oppose it. That's what's holding it up, as I understand it. It's the decision to be made by the state decision makers as to where that last casino license would go. And then once they resolve that decision, then the thinking is it's Yonkers, Aqueduct, and the third location.
The biggest political football around now, the migrant crisis, which you alluded to earlier, and the role that this area plays in that. We saw so many migrants who've come to New York City, tens of thousands, the number keeps increasing. You can only house so many people at the inn. We all know that. So now the city is paying for, or had planned to pay for, locales in Rockland County and Orange County to help house some of those migrants. Is there a role that Westchester can play in this?
Well, we're playing a role right now that we think is a rational, professional, managerial role. Let's just go backwards to go forwards. You have a demand, primarily in Latin America, although people come from elsewhere around the world, want to be part of the United States of America. We have freedom. We have economic opportunity. And John, I presume you're of immigrant stock, as am I. When once upon a time, Donato Mineiro came to America in the 1880s, he came for those reasons, for greater freedom and greater economic opportunity. And he is my great-grandfather. On my father's side, my grandfather, John James Latimer, was born in Ireland. And so the movements that led me to be born in the United States came from generations of other immigrants. And most all of us have an immigrant story of some sort. So it's the same motivation today. And people will go to great lengths to say, no, it's different. No, it's not different. It's the same motivation. The specifics are different case by case by case. In this particular case now, there's a much greater desire to come into the United States. Some of the Latin American countries, Venezuela comes to mind, have collapsed economically and politically. You've got an untenable situation in parts of rural Mexico because of drug cartels, and you have political upheaval as well as grinding poverty. That's why they come to the border. They want asylum. Now, if you're an asylum seeker, you're coming in legally. You're going to the United States government and saying, I want legal access into the country. I'm filing to seek asylum. So you're not here illegally, and people will say things, out of their own anger, ideology, their own beliefs. But the truth is, they're here legally. Now, they're queued up at the border in Texas, and Texas has a massive issue and problem at the border. And it's true as well in California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Florida, to some degree in every one of those states. But Texas bears the brunt of it. So the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, decides he's going to relieve himself of some of that burden by putting migrants, asylum seekers, on buses and sending them to other locations where the other locations can share some of the responsibilities. Of course, he's very selective. He doesn't send them to Chattanooga, Tennessee. He doesn't send them to Joplin, Missouri. There's a political dynamic here. He doesn't send them to Fargo, North Dakota. He sends them to New York City, Chicago, and Washington, D.C., established communities, large cities that are perceived certainly to be liberal, and a community that will welcome the people coming from across the border. Let's remember, New York City is the greatest portal for immigration in the history of this country. That's where Donato Mineiro came through and all of the other immigrants. And we welcomed the Lower East Side in the way that we welcomed them, because let's be honest, the Irish, the Italian, and the Jewish community was not welcomed when they came here. They were treated as second or third class citizens. Over time, they were integrated into the American society. But anybody who says that their great grandfather was welcomed to these shores is wrong. They were treated like dirt, you know, WAP, without papers. Mm-hmm. Nina, no Irish need apply. That's my ethnicity. If you're of Asian ethnicity, you have a similar story. Okay. Greg Abbott puts him on a bus, sends him to New York City. Eric Adams has a law on the books which says we must provide shelter for these people. They come into the Port Authority, the bus opens, people walk out of the bus. Where are they going to go? Eric Adams sets up a system to put them in hotels and motels temporarily while they're waiting for their asylum case to be adjudicated. The federal government has not fixed this program, and so these asylum seekers are on a long-term temporary housing situation. He reaches a point after a year where he can't handle them anymore. And so he starts having his people negotiate for hotels and motels outside of the city of New York, I think initially in Rockland County, Orange County, and they call around. It's a matter of the hotel being willing to take them. It's not mandated. The hotel says, yes, you know, we don't have the kind of business. You're going to pay for us. You're going to provide the meals. We'll take them. And of course, what you saw in almost every single neighboring county was an unwillingness to do that. The executive orders, we don't want them coming in, we keep them out, and all of the rhetoric that exists because the society is of two minds about immigration from the southern border. And there are some people that say, I want to build a big wall. Keep these people out of here. I don't want them here. That's what some people think. Some people realize that there is a humanitarian crisis. And when I spoke to this, I had a bit of a different philosophy. I think my attitude was very appropriate and managerial. It wasn't keep them out of here. It says we can do our share if it's properly sized and managed. And as we speak right now, we have three different sites. We're running in the vicinity of 300 individuals who are here. And they're in relatively small numbers in these three different locations. Keep in mind, people have forgotten this. In 2018, the Trump administration had 1,000 migrant children housed in Westchester County, at least 6 months, maybe a little bit more, in four different locations. Now, because this is a political issue, and because if you're on this side of the issue, and I say Donald Trump, you're okay with that. If you're on this side of the issue, you hate Donald Trump. But the reality is, it was the Trump administration that placed 1,000 here. So right now, we're up to about 300 migrant adults and children. That's a bit of a different dynamic. But these are people here legally. What happened with the kids is they were separated from their parents at the border. You got to remember a little bit of recent history. That's how those 1,000 kids got here. We managed that process. We and the local governments, we managed that process without incident, no crime, no disease spread. And so now I see it happening again. What do? Our attitude is we're not going to write an executive order, most of which were deemed illegal anyway by the federal court a week ago. And we're going to try to manage this. We cannot handle thousands of migrants in Westchester County. We can't do it. But if we're the only county that's responding in an appropriate way, then we will be swamped if things don't happen. So we need the city, we need the state, and we need the federal government to step up to the plate. But we are willing to drop the rhetoric. Let's not get out there and do all this stuff. Now, as we're having this interview today, last night, I happened to drive past one of the sites. And I didn't get out to meet people, but I just looked around. There's no discernible impact by these people being in these motel rooms. None. There's been no incidents of crime. We are working with the health department to make sure everybody's properly vaccinated and deal with illnesses that may exist. So much of this, John, is perception. and about national ideology, which focuses on the issue of immigration, not on how we're handling it in Westchester County. We think what we're doing is rational. As long as we can keep the numbers at a manageable level, we can get through this. Now, one more thing, and I'm over answering these questions, but we've said to the federal government, we'll do our share, but you need to, number one, advance work visas for these people, because these people are here to work, to have a better life for their kids. That's what they say when we have people interviewing them. Let's get them out. We have plenty of entry-level jobs that are undermanned in restaurants, working in gardening and agricultural settings elsewhere in the country. Get these folks to work. Let them be productive. Let them contribute to the society and then make some money and get into the American mindset. The second thing we've said is you have these cases adjudicated. Well, if you're going to park people in Westchester, and for that matter, Putnam, Dutchess, Orange, and so on, create a satellite immigration court right here in White Plains. We have a U.S. District Courthouse here, so it's under the federal aegis. Open up an immigration court and prioritize the asylum cases of those people that you placed here. Don't make people wait a year or more in a motel room. That's insanity. But we, the county, can't deal with this. This is what the federal government has to do. And we think the state should be more of a player in organizing the things that the city of New York does. Because, you know, when we deal with the city of New York, you know, the city of New York is just trying to relieve their burden. They're not looking at the macro pictures. The state, in theory, could do that. So we've got work to do, and we're monitoring it every day. We have some not-for-profits that are working on this. And I must tell you, I work with the mayor of Yonkers, mayor of White Plains, the mayor of Ardsley, and all three of them have been good partners. I went to the Ardsley Village Board just in the last couple of days to talk to them in person about what the county is doing to stand behind the village so that it's not one of these people getting dumped and we don't care what happens to them.
We had a hit-and-run fatality a few days ago in Peekskill. Residents in Peekskill saying we need improved safety on our streets. Now, we've done a lot to reduce speed limits around the tri-state area, not just in Westchester or in New York City, per se. Without mandating everybody just travel by bicycle or moped now, can we even take these speed limits down a bit further and yet be able to get around?
You know, the speed limit issue to me is not the main issue. I have fought when I was in the state legislature for lower speed limits in certain areas around schools particularly. And I do think that in some of those urban settings, it may be the situation in Peekskill where a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit is superior to a 30-mile-an-hour speed limit. Human nature being what it is, we all tend to generally ride at or slightly above whatever the limit is. So if you lower the limit, in theory, you lower the speed. But I have to tell you, you know, there's a point at which you have to look at how much is government action and how much is individual action. There are things you can do to traffic calm. You can, you know, you can reduce multiple lanes into one. You can create certain shoulders and buffers. You can make it easier to bicycle and all this stuff. But what I'm watching, and I'm sure you're watching it too, and the people that are looking at this interview, individual human beings are driving more thoughtlessly and recklessly today than I have ever seen before. I can be guilty of it at times. You're playing with the radio. You're setting up your phone, or you're engaged in the phone conversation more than you're engaged in watching what happens on the road. But I just judge it by how many times when the light turns green, do I instantly hear the honk of the horn behind me? Now, that's not a traffic accident. There's no fatality, but it's a mindset. People are driving more aggressively. The pressures of society are on them. And while they're behind the wheel, you know, those pressures manifest themselves in the way they drive. There are going to be people that are going to be hit and people that are going to be killed. Even though we use techniques like putting cameras on the stop arm of a school bus, which in theory makes it sure you'll get a ticket. Red light cameras, you have that in four cities and one village right now in the county. You know you'll get a ticket. But it's still human behavior, John, that matters more than any other single action. Perfect example, bridge strikes. A little bit different than the main topic here. Truckers on the road that do not read signs. The signs say bridge ahead, low clearance, something on the pavement. They go into the bridge anyway. Why? Who's not paying attention? They're listening to the GPS. A generation of people listen only to the GPS. When the little voice says, in approximately a half a mile, make a right turn, that's when you act. But the sign says no trucks. You don't pay attention to it until you slam into the King Street Bridge. So at some point, it's fair and honest to say the role of government is to go this far in trying to reduce these problems, but it's up to the role of the public education. Use your common sense. Drive with an attention to your driving ability, and you'll have less fatalities. And we have to enforce that And when we enforce it and you get the ticket and you complain, understand why you got the ticket. You sped. You ran a red light. You weaved dangerously through traffic. You did things that could cost a life, and you need to pay a penalty to understand that you shouldn't have done it and you better not do it in the future.
A summer conversation in Westchester can't go on without some discussion of Rye Playland. Rye Playland 2023. How are things there right now?
Well, keep in mind that a couple of years ago, my predecessor cut a deal with Standard Amusements. It was upheld in court, that turned the park over to Standard Amusements to operate it in its entirety. The county owns the land. It is a county-owned facility. But Standard makes the decisions of pricing, what the parking, what the entry fee will be. They make the decisions on what rides should be there. Some have left. Some new ones are coming in. They make the decision of the food program that they're going to have. And they manage the pool and they manage the beach. All of that was what was agreed upon by my predecessor for 30 years. The contract went into effect officially in December of 21. That's when the 30 years clock started ticking. There are no particular requirements for Standard to hit certain numbers. If they do X, then they pay a certain amount of dollars to the county. But the philosophy of the prior administration was we privatize these assets. That is not my philosophy. But what's happening at Playland now is the management of Playland is making their efforts to run the park under their principles. We want Playland to be successful. I happen to live right across the street from it, so I don't, you know, miss seeing it every single day of my life, every single day of my life. But the decisions about how many fireworks and when and how much security and how, you know, all those are decisions that are being made by Standard. We hope for their success. I will be long out of office and Standard will still be managing Playland. So we hope for the best.
You might be governor at that time, right?
I might be ambassador to France, for all I know. Anything.
All that's still to come, obviously, for
Je parle français, je parle un peu, mais je ne parle pas bien. But I could go to Paris if Mr. Biden would like me to go.
Mm-hmm. County Executive George Latimer. And here on Westchester Talk Radio, George Latimer. Lots going on summer of 2023 around the county. For example, screenings under the stars and more.
Yeah, we're excited in that the county parks that we do operate, which are 55 parks, have a lot of great things going on. You know, Bicycle Sunday continues for the weekends in June and then into July, except for July 4th weekend. Bicycle Sundays, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the Bronx River Parkway. It's almost a 50-year tradition, and we take a break in the month of August. We come back September, October. Great fun. July 3rd, which is the Monday night before Independence Day, Tuesday, July 4th, big shindig at Kensico Dam Plaza. Get there early. Parking is going to be a zoo. Carpool. Take Metro North to the Valhalla Station. There'll be music. There'll be fireworks. It'll be a great time at Kensico Plaza. Also at Kensico Plaza, all summer long, we have ethnic festivals. As we're speaking, the last weekend in June will be the African-American Heritage Festival. We've already had them for the Albanian-American community, the Polish community, Asian-American community. We have it coming up for a host of other ones, Irish and Italian and Muslim, Jewish, you name it, is still ahead of us. A couple of them will be at Ridge Road Park, almost all of them at the Kensico Dam Plaza. We have programs going on. I think they're all sold out now at our various nature centers for kids programs during the summer. We have opened our two beaches, Glen Island and Croton Point Park Beach. Both of them have opened for the weekends. We'll be opening our pools. Now, Playland Pool is reconstructed, and that is under the aegis of Standard. The other four pools are open. We're going to ceremonially open Wilson Woods in Mount Vernon. It was closed last year for reconstruction. Saxon Woods and the two in Yonkers, Tibbetts, and Sprain Ridge. Sprain Ridge was closed for 8 years. We came in and we did some things to get it open. So we're very happy to have those recreations out there. And then if you want to go mountain biking, you can go to Blue Mountain Park, or you can go to Graham Hills. If you want to golf, we have six golf courses that they open almost all year long. You can golf in December if you want. So we've got a lot of parks, recreations. We're very fortunate. The vast majority of these things were created under my predecessor's administration. My job is to be a good steward, keep them going, upgrade them like we did the North County Trailway and the South County Trailway, the historic Miller House in North Castle, and make them available for this year, and for this generation, and for next year, and the next generation.
Not to take anything away from the rest of the Hudson Valley, but bottom line is, anything outdoors or even indoors you'd like to do during the summer, you can do it all right here in Westchester.
You bet.
George Latimer, County Executive, great to have you back with us. Hope to talk to you real soon. All the best and enjoy your summer.
Thank you, John. Always a pleasure, and good luck to you and all of our friends at Shaw Creative.
Thank you. Our thanks again to County Executive George Latimer here on the Cup of Joe Political Show, Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. I'm John Marino. We are produced by Shark Creative, made possible by Robeson Oil, the house that service built. By Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard. By White Plains Hospital and by Michael Labriola, landscape design and construction of Arma. Catch all of our Westchester, Rockland, Putnam, Dutchess, Orange, and Fairfield County talk radio programming on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube. Download our app. It's called Westchester Talk. Take it with you 24/7, anywhere and everywhere you go. And yes, we are now on Apple Podcasts, too.